You are listening to KTOO Juno. I'm your host, Sammy Bartholomew, here on a Juno afternoon. On today's show, we'll get an update on CBJ activities from City Manager Kim Kiefer. We'll talk to Crystal Borland about healthcare. John Clow will be here to highlight the Juno Lyric Opera events, and we'll talk to Tara Lee Ellis about Girl Scout cookies. That, a writer's almanac, music, and more, here at 3 o'clock, right now on KTOO News. Weather Juno for the rest of the day, snow mixed with rain in the afternoon, with snow accumulation up to 1 inch. Tonight, rain and snow up to another inch, and a chance of snow in the morning tomorrow. This is KTOO, National Native News, is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Tristan Ottone, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. An association of chiefs in southern Manitoba has taken an unusual step. It's backing calls for a democratic election at a First Nation that's been plagued by scandal. But as Dan Karpinchuk reports, first it has to recognize a new chief.
For the past 40 years, the Thunder family has been associated with the leadership of the Buffalo Point First Nation. John Thunder adopted the title Hereditary Chief. The region has been turned into a thriving cottage area and retirement community for non-natives. In late 2013, Thunder was charged with criminal extortion after he was embroiled in a long court battle with 400 cottagers over his attempt to levy property taxes. The Southern Manitoba Chiefs Association passed a motion no longer recognizing Thunder as chief, and instead recognized Andrea Camp in the position because they say she has the support of the people. But Thunder says the association has no jurisdiction in Buffalo Point, and this controversy isn't new. He says it comes from his attempt to raise taxes and bring prosperity to Buffalo Point.
We're sitting here writing the book on economic development for First Nations for 35 years plus on how to solve this poverty and dependency, and yet every time we step up to the plate to try to solve these problems, we end up in court.
Thunder says he is still the chief and will get on with doing his job, but the Association of Chiefs say they will recognize Andrea Camp, and at some point, if there is an election in Buffalo Point and they elect Thunder, then he will be recognized as chief. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Business leaders in Indian Country, along with tribal, federal, and state officials, are gathering in Las Vegas. The 28th Annual National Reservation Economic Summit kicks off today. National Native News anchor Antonia Gonzalez is there and tells us about what's happening at the conference.
Attendees are here to learn from business leaders and take advantage of training opportunities. There's a lot of business development going on, including learning how to do business in Indian Country. They're expecting about 4,000 attendees for 4 days of training and networking. There are more than 40 sessions. Speakers are talking about marketing, social media, small business, and finance. So those are just some of the things that people are coming here to do.
And what are some of the agenda highlights?
Well, there's an energy forum taking place and roundtable discussion, and that will look at strategies tribes and businesses have used to create their own utility businesses and discuss the way the relationships are with local utilities. There's also a business leaders forum taking place that will be held on Tuesday, and that will be tribal leaders from tribal enterprises and corporations and members of Congress. Some of the panelists include Derek Watchman, who's the CEO of the Navajo Nation Gaming Enterprise, and also Tony Sanchez, who's the president of the Seminole Tribe of Florida, and U.S. representative from Alaska, Dong Young, will also be a panelist on that, and that's taking place on Tuesday.
So, Antonia, how is this event reflective of current business trends in Indian Country?
Well, I think a lot of people are coming here to take advantage of networking opportunities and looking at ways to expand economic development. You see a lot of tribes going beyond gaming and tourism these days. A lot of tribes are partnering with various companies, and they're gaining knowledge at this conference on how to have successful businesses.
Thank you, Antonia. Join us this week for continued coverage from the Reservation Economic Summit. On this day in 2002, Dr. Herman Charles Friedenberg III died. Dr. Friedenberg was a member of the Menominee Nation and the second American Indian in the country to become a dentist. He was a longtime member of the Society of American Indian Dentists. For National Native News, I'm Tristan Ottone.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. When you file online for your PFD, every Alaskan can support National Native News. Just use Pick, Click, Give and select KNBA-FM, Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. With one donation at a time, good things will happen all over Alaska. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is the Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here with City Manager Kim Kiefer. Thanks for coming on the show, Kim.
Thank you.
I hear you got a big meeting tonight.
Oh, we have. Yep, it's Monday night, so it's an assembly meeting. Starts at 7 o'clock at City Hall. We have a variety of items on the agenda. A lot of appropriations for funding, grant funding that's been brought in. We'll have a big check there from for $775,000 from the Friends of the Library to go towards the library project, which is out to bid at this point. So that's exciting to have that. We don't get to actually have the big check events very often. So that'll be fun that we literally get
it's a big check.
It's really a big check. It is, yeah.
And what do you expect from the library?
Pardon me?
What is it going to go towards?
It's going to the Valley Library, the design or the building of the Valley Library, which will go on Diamond Park, which is what was envisioned for that area in the 70s, I believe it was, when we actually purchased the property. It was with the idea that that would be the future home of the Valley Library. For a lot of years, it's been in the mall. And so now it's switching out, and we'll be in a building that they'll be able to control the hours and the time days of the week that they operate, operational costs. They'll be able to have a lot better control on that in their own facility.
Great.
So it's going to be exciting and a lot more space and built for a library rather than some of their retail business.
Right on. So what else is happening? I heard about the economic development plan that you guys are working towards.
Yeah, we have contracted with McDowell Group and Scheinberg, and they are working with stakeholder meetings right now. So they're going and talking to a number of businesses that are involved with economics in Juneau and bringing jobs to Juneau. And they will be presenting a report the middle of April to the assembly on where they are at this point and what they're seeing. There's a link off the Juneau.org webpage to go directly to their webpage. They're going to be doing some surveys coming up, so it's a good place to check in and see what's going on. The long-term goal is by December to have an economic development plan for Juneau that helps us look at where we 10 years and what are the pieces that we can do now to try and diversify our economy. Because when you put all your eggs in one or two baskets, something happens to those baskets, then that's a challenge for the community. So we want to try and look at how we can diversify our economy here. And everybody has a part in that. And so it really would encourage people to keep monitoring that process as it goes forward.
What's your vision for Juneau in 10 years? Dream Juneau.
Dream Juneau. What's my vision for Juneau in 10 years? Well, definitely have a more diverse population because we have some big engine drivers that if there's changes there, in fact, we're dealing with part of that right now with some projections of budgets being a little bit less than what we thought, or revenues a little bit less. So I'd like to see more diversity so that we aren't so reliant on sort of the big pieces. Having more independent, I think Juneau was a great place for working. We've got a great university here, so it's an opportunity for us to try and work out products for people. You know, if it can work in Juneau, so electric cars that can actually do the heating that needs to be done and the defrosting, and go up our hills in the wintertime. If we can get something that really works well here, it can probably work any place. And so I think having those kind of opportunities, since we have a university here that can do the study part of it, I think reaching out to others that can try and match that so that we can be a test zone for a lot of different things. I'd love to look at us being able to do a test for tidal energy, because we all know we've got quite the tidal fluctuation here. and so how can we touch that? How can we maybe be the forefront of some of those things that can help in a lot of other places? That's what I'd like to see in 10 years.
Great. And you mentioned that revenues aren't as high as projected. Should we be worried about that?
No, we shouldn't be worried about that. Our revenues ebbs and flows. And so what we've seen and what we're projecting for the next 2 years is they just won't grow as much. They will still grow, but they'll grow more in the range of 0.5% to 1% rather than 2 or 3%, which we've seen in the past. And I think really what's happening is we had the reduction in 2010, 11, and then things started coming back in 12 and 13, and they came back pretty strong in 12 and 13. And I think it's just balancing out now. I think markets always do that. We do that where, you know, it's like, okay, we can spend money now, and then it's like, okay, now we've sort of got over that, and now we're back into the regular steady stream. And I think that's where we're at. But what that means for us is that we actually have to look at some reductions in our budgets to accommodate for that. decrease, or not as much money coming in. And so we are going through that process right now. And we will be, there's a finance committee meeting on Wednesday night. We'll update them on where we are with that. And then the April 2nd, I believe it is, the first Wednesday in April, we need to provide the assembly with a balanced budget for 15 and 16. So we're the beginning of our two-year budget process. And then every Wednesday from April 2nd through the middle of June, we'll be having finance committee meetings to work out all of those things. And it's a very fluid process. So there's always new information coming in. We look at sales tax in quarters, for instance. So we've got a January, February, March quarter. So we'll be looking at that quarter and how is that based on projections in end of April, beginning of May. So we may see something totally different in that projection. So we don't know what's going to happen on the Hill, and there's changes going on there. So that's what I mean by it's always very fluid. We work with it as it comes in, and we keep working towards this end of having a balanced budget and everybody understanding what the services are that we will be able to provide and just keep walking down that path so that we have an adopted budget by the middle of June.
Wow.
So the assembly will be very busy for April, May, and June. Maybe they've got assembly meetings or committee of the wholes on almost every Monday, and then every Wednesday night we've got a finance meeting April through, like I said, mid-June.
Going into this process, do you expect any of the areas where these reductions will occur?
I've asked every department director to come up a list of reductions, and so I will be looking at what those are. They need to be sustainable. We've been doing reductions since 2009, so we've had a number of positions that we haven't filled since then. We've cut out sort of the easy low-hanging fruit already out of the budgets, and so now we need to prioritize our services and say, what are the services that we will do and do really well, and what are those services that we can't do now at the level that we have? So really make sure that what we're doing well, and those other pieces we're going to need to not do for a while.
Definitely.
And it will be most likely for a long while.
Well, can you tell me about the Wireless Telecommunication Facility Ordinance and the Master Plan?
Yes.
What is that?
That's a great question. So, if you want to have your gadgets and they need to connect somehow to the Internet, you need some sort of tower antenna to be able to do that. We don't have a plan on how that happens. So towers go up in different places, sometimes in neighborhoods, sometimes on top of buildings. And so there's two pieces of it. We have a master plan, and that's out there and available on Juno.org. And what the master plan does, it goes through the history of telecommunications and how we've changed and what's needed for towers, for you know, if you think about 15 years ago, people didn't have a cell phone all the time, these little mini computers in their pocket. Now they do, and so what you need to be able to power those are different things. And so it takes you through that piece. But then really what it does is an inventory of what we have in Juneau. So the majority of the master plan is the inventory of the towers and antennas that we currently have. And why that's important is because by looking at that, then you can see where there's holes. Where do we need to put some more antennas, more towers to be able to get the coverage that we need? So I grew up on the back loop. I still live on the back loop. And, you know, when you'd get around Montana Creek, you wouldn't have any coverage. You know, that's changed now. And depending upon, and there's other pockets like that. And so that's what the master plan does. Then the ordinance actually puts in place how you go through the process. So it is more specific. It can talk about what you do or what community development does from a review standpoint, how you go through that piece. You can, in the ordinance, encourage towers to be co-located and say, okay, here's the process to co-locate. We already have a tower there. We know it's already there. And so really we want to push as many or antennas on one tower rather than a bunch of single towers. So we'd say, okay, because we want to have people go there, here's the steps to do it, and we'd probably make those steps easier to co-locate. And then look at the towers that we need to infill and say, okay, where do they need to be, and can they be created in such a way that there could be co-location on those towers as well? So the ordinance really puts the meat on how we will go forward in the future. So we've got a couple public meetings coming up to have people look at the master plan and look at the ordinance and provide comment and input on it. So some of the things I've already heard from people, because towers go up in a variety of different locations and you don't always know who will see them, one suggestion was to do a balloon test. So
A balloon test?
A balloon test, yeah. So, you know, down south or even in Anchorage, I've seen them on used car lots, and they have those big helium balloons so that you can see them from a long way away. It's sort of that same idea, is you put the balloon up so that people can see where the tower is, and then they can tell, okay, am I going to see this? Is it going to be something that's going to be something that I see all the time going to work or from my living room window or from wherever I am? It gives you a better sense, because it's really hard to say, okay, if you look out this window right now, imagine a 75-foot tower right there. It's really hard to do that. Mm-hmm. But with a balloon, you could put it up to what the height of it would be, and people would have a sense of what that looked like. So that's one suggestion of something that could be put into the ordinance. Another thing that we've heard is to try and expand the notification for when a tower goes in, because it's a big thing and you can see it from farther away. Right now we have current rules that talk about how far we notify people when there's an event going on. So if somebody's building something, it's noticed. You may see the big red signs around that says this is happening. But with towers, do we look at having something bigger so that more people are aware of it than just what we have by code right now? So that's the kind of stuff that we're looking at for these meetings, getting people up to speed on what the master plan is and then what the ordinance is and what are the pieces that we need to have in the ordinance and people's comments on that as we move forward. So we'll have these comments, then we'll go to the Planning Commission, they'll work through it, and then it will end up to the Assembly, and they will work through it, and our goal is to try and have it adopted by middle to end of May.
Great. And so is the major issue with these towers just folks seeing them? And
you know, it's view sheds, having them in places where they used to not see things. Some of the towers have to have lights on them, so that draws attention to them more. Sometimes it's you know, how close it is to structures.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the things you could do in the ordinance is say, okay, what's the height of the tower? You need to make sure you have a clear zone around the tower. That, so if something by chance would happen with the tower, it's not going to fall on somebody's house or on any kind of other structure. And so that's part of it too. Where does it go? Where does it fit? It's really interesting if you start looking at towers and you look at the master plan and it talks about the locations of current towers. I think people, if they're not looking and they read the master plan, it'll be like, oh, you know what? I've been driving by that forever and just hadn't thought about it being a tower. I just hadn't seen it because it's just part of what you look at as you're driving around. So I think it will make people realize that they probably have just had these towers around them without really thinking about it.
Great. Well, is there anything else you'd like to share?
No, I think that covers it. So there's information, once again, juno.org. You can get information on all this going on. Lots happening in the city.
Great. Juno.org.
Yep, juno.org.
Thanks for coming on the show, Kim.
Thank you.
Every Alaskan can make a difference when they file online for their PFD. And it's easy to share a little of your PFD in Southeast communities through Pick, Click, Give. There are over 36 causes based in the Juneau-Douglas area alone, including KTOO Public Radio. The PFD application period ends on March 31st. And remember, you have a chance to double your dividend by using Pick, Click, Give by the March deadline. More information can be found at pickclickgive.org.
This is Bird Note. You'd think that with so much green in nature, many birds would be aware in the green for camouflage, not just on St. Patrick's Day, but every day. Yet very few of our birds cavort in Irish green. There'd be some wee exceptions, however. Some of the hummingbirds, with their backs of bright green. This tiny Anna's hummingbird is a bird of the West. When sunlight catches its throat and head feathers, an iridescent flash of rosy red gleams from this green bird. This one may be called the black-chinned hummingbird, but the surprise is the flash of iridescent purple when the sun strikes its chin just right. This green bird summers from the Rocky Mountains to the dry southwestern deserts. The ruby-throated hummingbird covers the eastern part of the country, the green male flashing its brilliant red throat as it hovers for a moment in the sun. Unless you're in one of the Great Plains states, one of these hummingbirds is probably coming your way soon. Watch for that flash of glittering green. Find out more about how to attract hummingbirds to your yard at birdnote.org. And a happy St. Patrick's Day from all the BirdNote team. I'm Mary Patricia Catherine McCann.
This is the Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here with Crystal Borland from the United Way.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the show, Crystal.
Thanks for having me.
So what's new on the healthcare beat?
The healthcare beat. So we're gearing up for March 31, which is the deadline to have health insurance. And so that's kind of coming up with our PFD, with our taxes. So this is the time to get enrolled if you're uninsured or underinsured, or if you just have any general questions about the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. We're going to be here in town this week helping sign people up.
Great. And so March 31st, that's the drop dead deadline, correct?
That's correct. Yeah, March 31.
Great. Just for a few of my friends out there.
Yeah.
So tell me about these events that are happening this week at the Jack.
Yeah. So I'm with United Way. I'm what's called a navigator. So I'm helping people enroll and also providing information. And I'll be there alongside Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. They're also a navigator grantee. So we'll be there assisting people at the Jack this Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. So if you have any general questions about the Affordable Care Act or how this is affecting you, if you are not sure if you're totally covered and just want to come and ask questions, we'll be there. But really, we also want to be enrolling people that don't have health insurance that want to fill out an application to determine if they qualify for help paying for that coverage. So, yeah, there's a lot there.
Great. So if you're going to come to one of those events, what should you bring with you paperwork-wise?
Yeah, so if you're going to get enrolled in coverage, things we'll need, not necessarily to have, but to know, is dates of birth and social security numbers for people in the household, and that's the tax household or people enrolling in the coverage. Also, some good things to have on hand is tax information. So we'll need to have a number of adjusted gross income, so have an idea of what your income is for the year. Whether you want to bring your recent taxes or just have that information, know it, That would be a good start. And then also, this is for people that are Alaska Native American Indian who will be filling out an exemption form. So if you receive services through Indian Health Services, through the search clinic, don't have other types of health insurance, and even if you do, we're recommending that you fill out an exemption form. And so you won't ever get penalized for not having formal health coverage. And so for that, you would need to have a tribal enrollment card, or if you have your certificate of Indian blood, or just some sort of tribal enrollment information shareholder status.
Great. What can people expect when they go there?
To have fun, have fun learning about health insurance. They can expect to sign in, get some information, and then there's going to be several of us. So, you know, if it's a little slower, hopefully you can just sit right down and talk to someone. If you're getting help with the exemption form, we'll have someone there with the paperwork, be able to copy your tribal enrollment card or other information, your other proof, and then filling out that form. And if you're looking for health insurance, then we can start by just chatting about options if you're not ready to, you know, walk the plank and fill out an application. Otherwise, you should anticipate being there maybe for half an hour to an hour if you're actually wanting to go through the process. And, we'll be there to hold your hand along the way.
Do you have any stories about people you've been able to help or not help through these types of events?
Yeah, absolutely. I just was in Anchorage with fellow coworkers, and we did some enrollment events there, and it was an amazing turnout. And we got, I think, in 2 days between four of us, we got 34 people enrolled.
34.
Yeah, and I would say that about at least 10 of those people were getting plans for $0. And that doesn't pertain to everyone. It's really based on your income. So these were people that had an income amount that they ended up finding plans that were $0 or, you know, under $30. So there were some really good success stories. You know, there were other people that got caught up along the way, you know, in the application process that needed to send in documents or other things. So we're going to have to do follow-up appointments. So there might be, you know, we might get to a place where we need to make a follow-up appointment. But I'm here in Juneau until the 31st and after. I live here, so I'll be, you know, available to continue the process.
What do you think is the most surprising people don't know about the Affordable Care Act or these services that you guys are providing?
Well, a lot of people think this is like government health care. So they're a little confused on all these new health insurance options or what these exchanges or marketplaces. So there's a lot of names, which is what makes it so confusing. But this program is really for people that don't have insurance through an employer or through, you know, other programs like Medicare, Medicaid, to look at private health insurance, but also be applying to get government assistance to help pay for that. So the plans available are like Premera, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, and you're going through an application not to talk about medical history, but to really, you know, give income information so you can see if you qualify for lower costs. I think another misconception is that people are hearing about this penalty for not having health insurance. That's a big talk, and there's a little confusion that it's going to be $95 for this first year on our taxes when we're filing in 2014. The penalty is really $95 or 1% of your income, whichever is greater. So if you're making over $10,000, most likely you're going to be looking at a 1% of your income as the penalty. So, you know, again, we're here to help people understand what that might look for their family.
Great. Good to know.
Yeah.
And we're going to do a live call-in program here on Thursday with you.
Mm-hmm.
Can you
tell
me about that?
Yeah, so I'll be here Thursday on Juneau afternoon. I think Lisa Fu is going to be hosting. She's been great at covering ACA of events and coverage. And we're going to leave it open to the public to call in and ask questions. So really ask questions about what this means for them, if they have any questions about the application process, the whole gamut. So it's not a political, you know, I'm really unbiased. I'm here to provide that information. So it's not a political commentary, really just here to answer people's questions if they have them, get them steered the right direction.
Great. So that is 3:00 on Thursday. And you can send email questions to Jeff at KTOO if you're not ready to call them in or want to get those ahead of time.
Yeah. And if anyone wants to set up appointments out there, just so you know, again, you can call me here in Juneau if you're not available for any of these events coming up this week at the Jack. And that number is 523-1147. Otherwise, just call 211. So if you're driving, please don't write down numbers. Just call 211, which is Alaska's information referral line, and they can get you connected with myself or another navigator in the area.
Great. And is there anything else you'd like to say to people out there, maybe on the fence, to encourage them to come to these events?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're just curious and you have questions, you know, we're not trying to sell insurance. We're really, again, just to get people in order and explain the process to them. So, you know, come by, and if you're feeling a little unsure how this will affect you or if you can get affordable health insurance, you know, we can help you out, figure that out really quickly before even going through the application process. We can kind of help you understand what financial assistance might be available to you and like how much the plans might cost. So we can do that before putting in any personal information. So
great. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Be part of the studio audience for Forum at 360, Decoding the Gas Line Project. For years, Alaskans have been talking about a natural gas pipeline. Now the Alaska LNG project has momentum and the state could become an owner. Forum at 360 will be recorded Monday, March 17th at 6 p.m. at 360 Egan Drive, Juneau, for later broadcast. Larry Persily, Tim Bradner, and Frank Amaduri will discuss the issues. Doors open at 5:30. That's Forum at 360, Decoding the Gas Line Project.
You are listening to A Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Danny Bartholomew, here on KTOO, and I'm here with some folks from the Juno Lyric Opera. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So we got Jacob Riddle here. You might have seen him in spam a lot. Becky Angstrom and Heather Mitchell.
Hi.
Yes, we'll be putting on a musical the first 2 weekends of April. The show opens April 4th and runs through the 13th. It is I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change. Heather and Jacob are both acting. We have two casts, which means you have two opportunities to see a phenomenal show and get a lot out of it with the two casts and enjoy it twice.
Absolutely.
How did you decide to do two casts?
We decided this is definitely a show for a crowd, a younger crowd possibly, that would really enjoy the humor and the music. Plus, Rosie Humphrey, the music director, and I, we talked about the fact that a lot of times in Juneau it's difficult to do a dinner and a show. You have to pick one or the other, and restaurants tend to close a little early. So it's hard. So we decided we would have an early show and a late show. So if people want to go out and make a night of it and go have a dinner and then come to a late show, they will finally have that opportunity in Juneau.
So is that for the younger folks or the older folks?
I'm not sure. I guess it could be for both.
We were told to say that it's not recommended for children under 13, but
right. That
is totally the parents' decision.
Right.
I think that by younger folks, there's a sense of, for me, I have younger children, so a lot of my friends that might be coming to the show, they may want to come to the earlier show because then they can get back and relieve the babysitter and tuck themselves in early. And then the rowdies can come out at the 9:30 show.
Right.
They can stay out as long as they want. So it's a little, it gives them an opportunity for everybody to come out and see it.
Great. And how did you guys decide to do this opera?
It's a musical.
It's a musical.
It's an off-Broadway musical. And I was approached by Rosie Humphrey, that's the music director, and she asked if I would be interested in directing. Usually in this town I choreograph, I don't direct, but I've been very excited about directing for once instead of just doing the choreography. And there's a lot of choreography in it too that these guys have learned.
Mm-hmm.
So she loves the show. She once did it with a group in Anchorage, and it has been her goal to get it here in Juneau, and she did it.
Yes, absolutely.
Why don't you guys tell me a little bit about each of your characters?
All right. Well, I actually, like Becky said, we have many characters, on top of characters. Mm-hmm. My view of my main character is probably somebody a little bit like myself, a little bit older, a little bit more cynical, a little bit more seasoned, and I bring that to all of the vignettes, I think, to a certain extent. And then each character, they really do run the gamut. I go everywhere from being an extraordinarily busy businesswoman trying to fit in a date to being a widow at a funeral who gets picked up.
Oh. Something to look forward to.
A little something for everybody.
Yeah.
Go on.
The really great thing about this show is if you've been in the dating scene or any scene,
hey,
aren't you
still in high school?
I am still in high school.
But what dating scene?
There's something in it for just about everybody. There's at least one scene that someone can relate to. And that's what I think is a really great thing about this show. It's just, you'll find something.
What was it like to incorporate choreography into this? Was that a natural experience for you, or?
Other than the dancing, yeah.
For me, I don't see, to me, you can't do theater without movement. So I loved looking at the script and listening to the music, and movement, to me, naturally got matched with it. And
absolutely.
These guys are great movers. So that part was easy. That was the easy
yes.
part.
The dancing part is kind of like coming home for me. I spent many years dancing. In fact, Becky and I worked together on a project, 15 years ago almost now. And so I haven't done any dancing on stage in a very long time, and I haven't I haven't done acting since I was in high school. So, you know, having done some singing in the last few years in town and having done dancing a little bit before that, this is nice. It sort of brings it all back around and, you know, for me, as I've gotten into middle age, to see if I could put them all together and have some fun, and I really am having a great time.
Yeah. And the cast, we do have two casts, and so like I said, you'll get to see a lot of talent, and if you, well, no, I'm not going to say if you will want to see the show second time.
Yeah.
Come to see the second cast. On our first cast, we've got Salisa Thole, Thomas Eggers, Christina Bruce, and Jacob Rill here.
That's me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in the second cast is Heather sitting beside me, mm-hmm. and Brian Klossmeyer and Kaylee McGooey with Travis Smith.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a small cast, but like Heather explained, they play so many parts. To me, that's just humorous, watching these talented actors go from being a little kid to a daddy that plays patty cake. That, to me, that's funny, watching them evolve and change into different people on stage.
Mm-hmm.
Incredible show.
Everyone's just so great, though. I mean, the energy during rehearsal is just a really positive thing. Everyone can just kind of play off of each other, because everyone in the show is just so talented. I wish we could have an 8-person cast, but...
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been great working together, and while a lot of us don't really know each other, we didn't know each other very well starting out in rehearsal, we've gotten to know each other really well, really quickly. I mean, probably to the extent that we get in trouble for talking and laughing, maybe, because we get along so well, and we have a lot of fun, and it's been great getting to know everybody.
Great. Well, can you tell me when the show times are?
Yes, the shows, like I said, will be Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. On Friday and Saturday, there are two shows, 6:30 and 9 p.m. The Sunday performance is at 3. The tickets are $22 for adults, $18 for students. But we are having an April 5th student night where tickets are only $15 for UAS students that are on a budget.
Or high school students, as long as they have a valid ID.
Right.
Was there anything else you'd like to share about this fabulous musical that's coming to Juno?
Well, I just want to say, I think what Jacob said, which is there's a little bit for everybody. If you've been married forever and you're going to be having an anniversary, come to the show. It's the perfect date.
Mm-hmm. Marriage Tango makes it.
Yeah. Marriage Tango, that's a funny one. If you're newly married, come to the show. If you're engaged, come to the show. If you've recently broken up or gotten a divorce or separated, come to the show. It's funny. It pokes fun at something that is such a natural part of our lives, relationships and how we navigate and connect with people. And, it pokes fun at men, it pokes fun at women. It just,
yeah.
It's a joy to watch.
And it's a joy to act in, really.
And nobody's safe. Everyone gets made fun of at least a few times.
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you guys for coming on the show. This has been Jacob Riddle, Becky Engstrom, and Heather Mitchell here from the cast of I Love You, You're Perfect, Now Change.
Right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Up next is a track from Harrison B., who will be focused on our new show at 360 called Alaska Originals, and we'll be doing a live broadcast of that next Thursday. So come if you like it.
I forgot that.
You'll find time in a lifetime to when the storm is gone through. And that water overflowing and all the streets will run through. We get high and the clamp down and the pour will brand new. Yeah, put that water if you let it, it's gonna to the people, yeah, to the evil, to the scared and what's to the brute. The oceans overflowing with all the new things can do. Righteous living, sudden give up, prejudice they can't refuse. That water, if you let it, they're gonna help you. And there are so you're singing, they need a watch to the new, and you're crazy.
truth, I believe. The healing, I do believe it's in the living. This type of thing, I do believe it's being true. So the next time that you go out and when you find time where there is some drowning to do, you let your troubles do your healing. You let them carry you. And then untold, when you're singing and need a watch to the news, and you cling to the burden without the burden. So run through. But let go, you know you're gonna drown, yeah. When you let go and you let loose, the way you let that water. Good people are gonna help me. Need a washing anew, and you cling to the ground as the water, the storm will do. Yeah, but you let go, and you know you gon' try. Yeah, go on, you let go, and you let know. But you let that water do your healing, you let it carry you. You let your troubles do your healing, and they're gonna carry. Lord, I know they're gonna carry you, yes,
sir. And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 17th of March, 2014, St. Patrick's Day, feast day of the patron saint of Ireland. Though we must point out, St. Patrick himself was English. He was not Irish. And until fairly recently, St. Patrick's Day was celebrated only as a religious holiday in Ireland. People got the day off from work, they went to church, they had a big roast dinner with their families, and the pubs were required to remain closed. It was the Irish in America and Canada who turned the Saint's Day into the big party that it has become. Parades, a big part of it. New York City's is the largest in the world, although Boston had the first one in 1737. In New York City, the march up Fifth Avenue, 150,000 marchers, the 69th Infantry Regiment leading the way. In Dublin, the parade has grown into a five-day festival. Millions of people come every year, and the consumption of Guinness Stout more than doubles. Today, around 13 million pints will be drunk around the world. It was on this day, 1917, the National Gallery of Art opened, Washington, D.C., the project of Andrew Mellon, the industrialist and Secretary of the Treasury. In 1930, Mellon had the chance to buy art from the Hermitage in St. Petersburg, Russia. Stalin had ordered the museum to raise money for the government, sell off valuable pieces, and Mellon was there. He bought 121 paintings, including work by Raphael, Rembrandt, Botticelli, and Jan van Eyck. In 1936, he wrote to President Roosevelt offering to donate his collection as well as $15 million to build a museum, a neoclassical museum in Washington. The architect John Russell Pope. Construction began June 1937, and neither Andrew Mellon nor Mr. Pope lived long enough to see it completed. They died in late August 37, within 24 hours of each other. The National Gallery, admission always free to the public. More than 4.5 million people visit it every year. And it's the birthday of the novelist Penelope Lively, born in Cairo, 1933, author of The Road to Litchfield, Treasures of Time, and According to Mark. Grew up in a suburb of Cairo, studied history at Oxford. Her novel Moon Tiger won the Booker Prize in 1987. A book in which she wrote, "We open our mouths and outflow words whose ancestries we do not even know. We are walking lexicons in a single sentence of idle chatter. We preserve Latin, Anglo-Saxon, Norse. We carry a museum inside our heads. Each day we commemorate peoples of whom we have never heard." Here's a poem for today by Siegfried Sassoon, entitled Everyone Sang. Everyone suddenly burst out singing, and I was filled with such delight as prisoned birds must find in freedom, winging wildly across the white orchards and dark green fields, on and on and out of sight. Everyone's voice was suddenly lifted, and beauty came like the setting sun. My heart was shaken with tears, and horror drifted away. Oh, but everyone was a bird, and the song was wordless. The singing will never be done. A poem from 1919 by Siegfried Sassoon, from his collected poems published by Faber and Faber, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles, with assistance from Kathy Roach. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
You can look fine and feel fine and still have health issues that need attention. Conditions like high blood pressure, prediabetes, and some cancers are easier to treat when they are found early. Getting a yearly checkup is the first step. Make an appointment today and make a yearly checkup a part of your routine. Take charge of your health. Take charge of your life. For more information, go to safeandhealthyme.alaska.gov. This message is brought to you by the State of Alaska, Department of Health and Social Services.
This is the Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Amy Bartholomew, here on KTOO, and I'm here with Tara Lee Ellis from the Girl Scouts.
Good afternoon, Annie.
Good afternoon. So exciting to be here. You brought some cookies with you. Holy moly.
I did. You might have noticed around town our Girl Scouts are out selling cookies. They're excited. Spring is here, and we're excited to have them in today.
So what are my chances of getting some cookies if I didn't pre-order any with Girl Scouts?
Oh, you can find them at all the stores like Fred Meyer's and Safeway, usually in the afternoon for evenings. They're out there. Even starting Troop 4045, we'll be selling cookies at Mendenhall Mall during lunchtime from 11 to 1, and then again during the dinner rush there at Mendenhall Mall area.
Great, and if you need a refresher, what kind of cookies are out there?
Sure, this year we're selling our top six flavors. We've kind of condensed and gotten rid of a couple flavors. But this year we have the Thin Mints, a very classic chocolate mint cookie. Next is the original Trefoil, which is a shortbread that was kind of developed in 1914. The original Girl Scout cookie is a Trefoil. Next is the Samoas with the coconut and caramel
deadly
mix. Deadly Samoas. We'll eat some later. And then my daughter's favorite is the Tagalong. And that is a chocolate peanut butter sandwich mixed together. And next we have the peanut butter Do-Si-Dos.
Oh, my gosh.
So like a peanut butter sandwich just full of butter and peanut nutty flavor. And then the last is the classic lemon cooler called Savannah Smiles.
Is that a new one?
It's recent, within the last few years.
All right.
And it's actually one of our top sellers. It's not, doesn't have the chocolate, but it just has a nice refreshing, like a nice tea cookie on there. So,
how many years have you sold Girl Scout cookies?
Oh, my goodness. For a while. I started Girl Scouts as a brownie and then kind of worked my way up and then just followed tradition from my mom and my sister. So, been scouting for many years.
Scouting for many years.
Yes.
And how many Scouts are in Juneau?
In Juneau, we have about 300 girls who are active Girl Scouts, either in troops or doing it individually. And then hopefully for the state, well, for Southeast Alaska, we're up to about 600 Scouts from Yakutat all the way down to Cake. And there's more around the state, but we just focus on Southeast.
Great. And why is it important to sell cookies? I mean, it's a fundraiser, right?
It is a fundraiser for the troops. Some of them are setting goals. But the main thing for the cookie program is that it teaches our girls how to set goals. Even from the young daisies, which are in kindergarten and first grade, they might set a goal what they might want to do with their money that they've earned. Like, do they want to have a pizza party or a pool party? Where I have older troops, cadets, like 6th and 7th graders, who already have their sights I'm going to Europe next year.
Europe?
Europe.
Where do they want to go?
We have little chalets over in, like, Scotland and different places, and they've had a goal that they are going to make it there. So they'll be doing a lot of fundraising to make their goal. But the cookie program is just one skill that they learn, five, you know, essential skills. A second one is also, like, decision-making. I mean, like, they have to decide. They have to agree as a troop, as a group, what they're going to do with their money. And so how that process goes about. A third skill is money management. How to make a budget for a trip for Europe is quite different than how to make a budget for a trip to the pool or a pizza party someplace. So, and then people skills, learning to ask people, you know, as they go into the grocery store, would you like to buy some cookies, or talking to their neighbor or their friends about what they're doing or what they're going to be doing with their proceeds that they make. It's all important in there. And then really business ethics is the next part of our skill that the girls are learning with the cookie program, of learning to be ethical in all their things that they do as good Girl Scouts.
Great. And what's the going rate for cookies right now?
They are $4 a box.
Ooh.
Although as cookies sell out, I have heard that they've been auctioned off a little bit higher. So
watch out, Juno.
Watch out, Juno. But $4 a box. You can call the office. If you're looking to locate cookies, there's an app on your iPhones to do a cookie locator, and it kind of tells you which grocery store they'll be at. Or, again, just call the office or find a Girl Scout and ask her.
Great. And those locations, again, where you can get cookies?
Mendenhall Mall this week from 11 to 1, Safeway, Cars, Fred Meyer's. Western Auto, we have a brand new Daisy Troop 4008, has been setting up shop at Western Auto, and they've been great. At the Grind by Costco, they sometimes have their drive-through booth out there.
Great. Well, thanks for coming on the show. Juno, get your cookies before you can't.
Exactly. I'm going to leave you a whole set of cookies here so you can try them.
Oh, no. Okay. I'll take them. Thanks for coming on. This has been a Juno Afternoon. I've been your host, Annie Bartholomew. You're listening to a track that we'll be playing with Rob Cohen happening on Wednesday for our music showcase with KRNN. Tomorrow, Scott Burton will host the show here on a Juno Afternoon and will highlight music from the canvas. Liz Weber will be here with details about Kick Butts Day. We'll talk to Margie Hamburger about the City Museum, about their day camp, and we'll learn about Juno Community Charter School and their upcoming open house, plus the Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more, tomorrow at 3 o'clock with Scott Burton on KTOO News. This is KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley, Knock Bay, K269 at AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on television channel 871.
We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Weather's for the rest of the day. Snow mixed with rain in the afternoon. New snow accumulation up to 1 inch, highs around 37. Tonight, rain and snow with possible accumulation up to 1 inch. Tomorrow, chance of snow in the morning, then rain likely. This is KTOO.
Crimeans have voted to leave Ukraine. As for all the foreign criticism of yesterday's referendum,
actually, I don't care how they will feel about this. They did the Maidan. Why can't we do what we want here?
It's Monday, March 17th, and this is All Things Considered.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Audie Cornish.